This is podcast number 88 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, this is Marlene Peterson, and today we're talking about building kindness in our children. How to teach kindness to children through stories. In teaching children some of the important rules of conduct and lessons of life, a great deal may be left to time. Discretion, for instance, even a very impulsive child learns this with little other help than time. And carefulness in the use of money, time alone will teach this, even to a spendthrift child. When there are so many lessons to be taught to children, parents may well leave to time any that can safely thus be left. There are, however, certain necessary principles which must be established in children at the earliest possible moment in their lives. To trust to time in connection with these would be not only wrong to the child, but wrong to the world in which he lives. Perhaps the greatest of these principles is that one which has to do with kindness and consideration to persons, to animals, and even toward inanimate things such as trees and flowers, books and toys, one might even say household and schoolroom furniture. Gentle thoughts, feelings, and actions, these constitute kindness and are so necessary to the child that there must be no delay in helping him to make them his rule and habit. Children are seldom unkind knowingly. The teaching of kindness to them, therefore, consists chiefly in making plain to them what kindness is, and also what unkindness is, in showing them that happiness is dependent upon the one, and that misery results from the other. Children are quick to understand an abstract idea if it be presented to them in concrete form. How shall parents go about teaching their children the meaning and the importance of the great and fundamental idea of kindness as a principle of daily living? Of the many good ways, one of the best is by use of stories and the personages of stories. There are no better tales for this purpose than fables and folklore, for the reason that these old stories are simple and direct, and moreover deal not only with persons and animals, but with inanimate things. Relics of the childhood of the race, they are peculiarly within the sympathetic understanding of children. One of the first forms of kindness to another person that a child learns is sympathetic consideration for the sick. Even very little children are taught to be quiet when mother has a headache or when the baby is not well. And generation after generation of children have gathered flowers from small gardens to take or to send to the sick. This is a lesson easily learned by children, but still one that they must be taught. There is no more complete embodiment of the great lesson of kindness to the sick than Andersen's tale of The Angel. A child reading or hearing read this story will not only desire to bring cheer to those who are ill, but will see, so far as a child can, into the mystery of pain and the companion mystery of the taking away of the bitterness of pain by sympathy expressed in acts of kindness, however small. More helpful to a child than many admonitions regarding kindness to the sick will be a quiet reading of this story with his mother or father, or even by himself. Another form of kindness to other persons, namely generosity, it is also needful that children learn at a very early age. There is many a story that teaches this lesson. One especially likely to appeal to children is Jack and His Master. This story makes plain the meanness of the ungenerous as well as the noble-mindedness of the truly kind. Boys and girls alike will see just how poor a person the skin churl was, cruel and, like all cruel persons, a coward. They will be quick also to appreciate the fine spirit of Jack, who contented himself with winning justice for his brothers, forbearing to punish the skin churl as he deserved. How amazingly quick are children to grasp the meaning of this story. In my neighborhood, there is a small boy who likes to tease the little girls of the neighborhood in various ways, but preferably by running off with their toys as they play out of doors. Not long ago, I observed that another little boy of the neighborhood had suddenly assumed the position of champion of the little girls in this matter. One day, from my window, I saw the small T's running off with a croquet mallet and the other boy in swift pursuit. "I'll hit you with it," the T's shouted, "if you get too near." "I'll hit you with it when I get it away from you," the other boy shouted. He did get it away from the T's. For a moment he stood with it in his hand, then ran back with it to the little girls. My alarm lest one or the other of the boys should carry out the threat made by both had become so great that by this time I was out of doors, ready to intervene, no other grown-up being about. "I'm glad you didn't hit him," I said to the small champion. "I was going to," he said shyly, "but I remembered Jack didn't cut the skin off the skin churl. You know the story?" I'm quite sure that had that small boy been talked to, however so earnestly and carefully, on the subject of kindness, he would not have been led by the talk to constitute himself a protector of little girls against a teasing boy. Certainly, even less would he have been led to be kind to the tease. But the lively and vivid story of Jack and his master, which he had happened to read, had done both. Still another form of kindness to other persons that children cannot learn at too early in an age is a pleasant, spirited tolerance of well-intentioned mistakes or blunders on the part of others. Children, as frequently as grown persons, are called upon to say, "He means well," and like grown persons, they must learn to say it kindly instead of with irritation. A baby brother trying to help his big sister by weeding her garden is very apt to pull up flowers instead of weeds. And if the big sister has not learned how and why to be kind under such circumstances, more harm than the injury to the garden is likely to be done. The sort of kindness needed in such a case as this is of so subtle a nature that it does not find expression in many stories for children. But there is one story, Gudbrand on the Hillside, which contains a practically perfect expression and interpretation of it. A child, having been acquainted with Gudbrand, makes the acquaintance of more than one of the fundamental facts of sweet and gentle human relations. Gudbrand loved his wife, as she knew. The wife of Gudbrand loved him, as he knew. The entire desire of each was the well-being and happiness of the other. What matter, then, that Gudbrand made poor bargain after poor bargain when he went to sell the cow? What matter that his wife found good reason after good reason for justifying each poor bargain? The story is not an extract from a book exemplifying the principles of logic. It is a tale of mutual affection, transcending logical processes. That Gudbrand and his wife, at the end, found themselves in possession of more money, in spite of Gudbrand's foolishness, and by reason of the love and trust between the simple couple, than would have ever been paid for the cow, is perhaps the climax of illogic, and possibly also of an affection so great that it includes tolerance on the one side, and a certainty of tolerance on the other. Children are so disappointed when things well meant are not the things desired. For their own happiness, as well as for the development of right principles in them, they should be introduced to Gudbrand and his wife. They will be friends with them from the first, and in their moments of need will be helped by them. I once met with an incident that confirmed me in this belief. A little girl friend of mine, who had a great desire to possess some handkerchiefs with colored borders, was delighted a few days before her birthday to hear that her grandmother meant to give her handkerchiefs on that day. No one knew of the child's taste in handkerchiefs, and her grandmother, as a matter of course, sent her white handkerchiefs with white embroidered edges. The little girl looked at them, and her eyes filled with tears, but she smiled bravely. "I wanted some with red and blue edges," she said, "but Grandma didn't know. Grandma always tries to be kind." Afterward, talking with the little girl, I said, "I am glad you know that Grandma always does try to be kind." "Yes," the child said, "people do when you like them and they like you, like Gudbrand and his wife. He was a silly thing, but he tried to be kind, and his wife knew it. It is a lesson that we all need to learn, that those whom we like and who like us try to be kind. That little girl had learned it through a story, as children most easily do learn the great and necessary truths. It has been truly said that the strange cruelty toward animals sometimes shown in children is due to the fact that children do not realize that animals can feel pain, that they are in many ways like themselves. This being so, kindness to animals can best be taught children by showing them the likeness between animals and human beings. With older children, nature study makes practically impossible any cruelty to animals. But the habit of kindness to animals should be established long before children are old enough for the study of nature. This can be done best, perhaps, by the use not of literal stories of nature, but of tales in which animals speak like human beings, provided always that the stories are such as have the endorsement of time, that is to say, the classics. The story of The Ugly Duckling teaches a child not only the unwisdom of judging by appearances, it shows him also the meaning of cruelty to things weaker than or different from himself. One of the characteristic features of the Montessori method is the importance placed upon gentleness and care in handling and using inanimate things. The children in the Montessori houses of childhood, while left very free in many ways, are required to use carefully and to put neatly in their places after using the various articles with which they work and play. Furthermore, in order to teach care in handling objects, even the small children are not only allowed but taught to carry bowls of hot soup from the serving receptacle to the tables at the luncheon hour and to ladle the soup into plates. Parents who have not had the opportunity to send their children to Montessori schools can well teach them this important principle of gentleness in dealing with inanimate things simply by using the occasions for inculcating this principle, which arise far too frequently in the home. Not to destroy their toys, not to tear their books, not to pull leaves from trees or the petals from flowers. These things every mother finds herself needing to teach her little children. Here again, not literalness, but imagery is what is needed. Stories in which inanimate things speak and behave as though they were alive will help the children to treat them gently, or in other words, kindly. The Constant Tin Soldier might profitably be read to the little girls as well as to the little boys when they show a tendency to treat their toys roughly or to destroy them. That tin soldier has been a faithful friend of many a toy cupboard. He should be given a place in those of present-day children. The fir tree will do more than many injunctions or penalties to keep the children from pulling the leaves from the trees or injuring their bark. The Lion and the Mouse is perhaps the most familiar story teaching the reward of the kind. Even very little children like this story and learn from it. Then, too, there is the Christmas story, so dear to all children, Why the Evergreen Trees Never Lose Their Leaves. This story is often told simply as a legend of the Christmas tree. It might more often be told as an exemplification of the blessing that falls upon those who are kind. So clear is the lesson of the story, however, that even when it is not pointed out to children, they see it. In the garden of a little friend of mine, there is an apple tree in which robins nest from year to year. One year a robin with a broken wing came to the tree. Great was the excitement of my little friend. "Won't it be lovely at Christmas time," she said excitedly, "to have a tree with flowers on it as well as leaves?" Inquiry revealed that she expected the apple tree to keep both its leaves and its blossoms because it, like the evergreen of the story, had been kind to a bird with a broken wing. "If all trees had a chance to be kind to poor little birds with hurt wings," she said, "they'd all be green all winter. And wouldn't that be nice?" The punishment of the unkind, children are helped by finding this also in the stories they read or hear. The tale of the tongue-cut sparrow points a moral that every child will be quick to see. So also does the story of Tit for Tat. In these stories, as in perhaps no others in the world, do we see the peculiar meanness of unkindness and the justice of the natural, inevitable punishment that usually follows swift upon it. From babyhood to manhood or womanhood, from then to the end of life, the principle of kindness should govern all our relationships with people, and the quality of gentleness should enter into all our actions, even those that have to do with the most everyday of inanimate objects. One of the greatest tasks of parents is to implant and to cultivate this principle in their children. Many indeed are the good ways in which parents can and will teach kindness to their children. All these ways are to be freely used. Since, however, one of the most easy, as well as the most natural ways, is through the use of the old fables and folktales, stories that will be told to children in any event, this method should be fully employed. It will most surely be effectual, and also it will be enjoyed by the children at the time, and remembered by them afterward with affection and happiness.